Looking to step up your Mother's Day flowers? The Home Depot has an idea. Let Mom's Green Thumb do some digging with colorful flowers, pots, and premium soils to bring out the most in her patios, walkways, and gardens. Right now, get Vigoro Potting Soil just $8.97 for strong, healthy, vibrant plants, indoors and outside. Shop our wide selection online and pick up your order in-store and give Mom the gift of a beautiful garden. Get Vigoro Potting Soil just $8.97 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. See homedepot.com/delivery for details.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Welcome to the NASCAR NBC podcast. I'm your host, Nate Ryan. Today here at Stewart Haas Racing's Formula One shop in Kannapolis, North Carolina, where I'm joined by one of the drivers for the Haas F1 team, Kevin Magnussen. Kevin, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
You've been in North America for a few weeks now. You raced in Austin last week, but I know that you were at another race before that in Atlanta watching your father compete as well, right?
Yes. Yeah, we've spent a few weeks over here. Yeah, it was great to watch my dad in Atlanta. It's been a long time since I've gone to one of his races. So and then he won the championship on that weekend, so it was good timing.
Yeah, your father, Jan Magnussen, competed in F1 and now races in sports cars in IMSA, and as you said, won the championship at Road Atlanta while you were there for the season finale. And I understand it was a family affair, your brother and sister?
Yeah, so I have, my dad has two kids with his second wife. My brother is 9 and my sister is 8. So they come to many races. They travel, you know, together as a family, and I do my thing and he does, you know. So we don't get to see each other so much, but the two younger ones, they come with him often.
So that probably is pretty rare that you have that kind of family experience, I guess, where you guys are all in the same place.
Yeah, right? Definitely. It doesn't happen very often.
What is it like getting a chance to watch your dad race? The tweet that you sent out that I saw was that the old man still has it. Is it cool to be able to see your dad still be competitive?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, he definitely still got it. He's still fast, and you know, there's younger drivers coming in as well, and he's outperforming them. So, you know, as long as he can do that, I'm sure he's going to keep on racing. So it's great to see.
Do you hope to have a chance to compete against him at some point?
Yeah, I do. It would be great to do a race with him. Maybe Daytona or Le Mans, or, you know, one of the big races. We're both racing, you know, we're both professional racing drivers, and we share that passion. So it'd be, you know, a shame not to do it together.
So you also got a chance at the Circuit of the Americas last week as well in Austin to hang out with another driver. I know Clint Bowyer, who is, of course, your Stewart Haas NASCAR teammate, got to spend some time with you guys in the paddock. What was that like?
I think it was the first time I met him. And yeah, it was good to have him. He's a cool guy. And it was good to have a bit of a NASCAR chat with him. And yeah, show him around the garage, show him the car and the steering wheel. It's very different, you know, world. Even though it's both race cars, it's quite different.
What was he most curious about, or what did he ask you about?
Well, I think he was surprised about all the you know, systems and kind of switches and buttons you have in the car. NASCAR is a little more simple, you know, in terms of the systems you have in the car. You just got raw power,
yeah,
and speed in the car. But in Formula One, it's you know, everything can be fine tuned, and which, you know, you may like or may not like.
You think Clint would like it?
I don't think so. I think he prefers his good old NASCAR.
And that's because of, as you said, raw power. So there's a difference in the way you're harnessing the
engine. I mean, it's very, very different. I don't think I would jump in a NASCAR and be quick straight away. And likewise, I don't think Clint would jump in a Formula One car and be quick straight away. It's completely different, you know. And even though it's both race cars, you know, four wheels, an engine, steering wheel, it's a completely different discipline.
Do you have any desire to maybe go for a spin in a cup car at some point?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I just love racing, and I love race cars, and I would like to try everything. I've never raced or even driven on an oval track before, so that in itself, the track would be completely new to me. But it would also be awesome to have a go in, you know, in a NASCAR. It's such an iconic, you know, car, and even the sound, just what, you know, I've been to a NASCAR race, and that sound of the V8 engine, you know, roaring, would just, you know, get me going.
Have you had a chance to go over the shop that's adjacent to this building and walk around and tour that a little bit? Or?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Every time I come here, I go over there.
Oh, really? Okay.
Haven't been too many times, but, you know, I'd love to have a go.
Are you keeping track of what's happening over on the NASCAR side, or you and your Formula One teammates and crew, like, kind of paying attention? Because Stewart Haas Racing right now is the behemoth of the Cup Series. I mean, they got four of the final eight playoff drivers. They dominated Talladega. They are right now the pinnacle of NASCAR.
Yes, and, you know, it's cool to see, and, you know, we're proud of it, even though we're not directly a part of the NASCAR. It's our team, and we carry the same name, and it's something that we in the Formula One team are proud of. But unfortunately, we don't get a chance to really follow it so much, because on our weekends we have to go to bed early, and, you know, we can't get up in the middle of the night to watch the races if we're in China or whatever. So we miss a lot of the action. But you know, of course, we're following on the sideline.
Obviously, you gotta prepare for Malaysia or Singapore or whatever you are. Let's talk a little about Haas F1, Kevin. You guys aren't quite, obviously, where Stewart Haas Racing is in the Formula One pecking order, but it seems like you've made some strides here in year two with the team.
Yeah, we have. I mean, it's only our third year in Formula One for Haas F1 as a team. And, you know, it's not like Gene went into Formula One and bought an existing team. You know, he created the team from the bottom with Günther and made a new structure. And for that, you know, to be so successful in only 3 years, that's never happened in Formula One before. Formula One is very, very difficult in terms of, it's expensive. You know, you need a budget of around $400 million a year to compete with the big guys like Mercedes and Ferrari. And, you know, a privateer is never going to really do that. So for us to be, you know, competing and actually beating teams like Renault, who is spending, you know, a lot more money than we are, and have a lot more people employed and many more designers and just much more resource, we're beating those guys. And, you know, I think on headcount we must be, if not the smallest team, then at least close, and we are fighting with Renault for fourth position in the championship. So that's really, really impressive and hasn't been seen before, I'm sure.
And you have some experience, like we said, it's your second year at Haas F1, but third year for Haas F1 as a team, and you had some experience prior to coming here with some other teams and know how those teams operate and are structured. What is it about, I guess, the efficiency that Haas F1 has? As you said, they have fewer people, but they're able to produce those results. What do you see that this team is doing maybe differently than some of the other teams that's working so well?
Well, where we're different is that we buy a package from Ferrari, so we get the front suspension, we get stuff like the steering wheel, the power steering, we get the engine, the gearbox, all the electronics. So those are kind of crucial parts that would take a lot of resource to design and build and produce, that we don't have to worry about. So we can put all our focus from the people we have here, make them focus on aerodynamics and vehicle dynamics and just performance on the car. And I think that structure works well, because if you have so many different departments, you know, making gearboxes and electronics and engines and all that, they would have to work together. So having a smaller, more simple structure, focusing on fewer areas, I think is more efficient, maybe. So I think that's part of the reason.
What are your goals with Haas? Because we're casual fans here for the most part in America, but we know that F1, the way it lays out, there's Ferrari, there's Mercedes, and Red Bull is kind of in the mix. But it seems like beyond that, everybody is playing for best in class in terms of maybe not being able to get the win or get on the podium even on a regular basis. What are your goals? Is it fourth or fifth, and you know, the overall or manufacturer situation every week? How do you look at it?
Well, this year we've been gunning for fourth, but it's not that easy to kind of set yourself a goal, a realistic goal, because you know you might miss, you know, you might put that target in the wrong place. If you say, if next year we say, okay, we wanna be fourth, mm-hmm. and then what if we then start the season and we actually realize we can be third?
Right.
Then you know it's right. that kind of target is a bit useless, because Formula One is too unpredictable to work like that. So I think the best way for us is, you know, we just every day have to do our best to prepare ourselves and, you know, work as hard as we can to improve and learn and use our experience to become better. And then, you know, next year, you know, we'll finish the season here and we'll try and do the best we can, and we'll try and catch Renault, although they took a big step forward this weekend in Austin. We'll still try and get them, but then next year I think the best way is to start the season and just see where we are, and then you know, try and maximize that whatever position we're in.
I suppose that you're a great example of maybe goals aren't a great idea, because in your first F1 race ever, you finished on the podium in third place, right? I mean, that probably was not an expected result, and you did it. So I'm sure you wouldn't want to set a goal of, hey, I'm going to finish on the podium, not knowing that you could do it, right?
Yeah. And then, you know, then that's a good example, because I came into my first race, and then I think prior to Formula One, you know, I'd been in a position always to win races and have pole positions and fight for championships and win championships. So, you know, I was used to winning and fighting for wins, and then stepping up to Formula One as a young guy, you're very, you know, naive, and you think, surely I'm going to win still. And, you know, I remember coming into the first race in Australia thinking, you know, having the mindset that I was going to fight for the win. And so I finished second. I actually finished third, and I was even, you know, I was happy to get on the podium, but I remember being on the podium not feeling like, you know, I'd won, which I hadn't. So, you know, but I wasn't overwhelmed with happiness as I would be now if I got on the podium. Because then after that, I was clearly just expecting to get on the podium every time, because that first race with zero experience, I'd got on the podium. So I thought, you know, now with more experience, surely I'm going to win soon. So, but then it didn't happen again. And that's because, you know, the other teams just improved more and got their cars better. And then from that point, you know, it was just downwards for us, because as a team, our car wasn't getting much better and other teams were improving, and we just didn't have a chance of getting on the podium. So, you know, I said I had wrong targets, so I was really frustrated all that season because of the first race I got on the podium.
Right.
So it's just it's out of your hands, because, and that's what's frustrating about Formula One. I got on the podium in the first race, not knowing anything and with zero experience. And then, you know, with time, I learn more and more, and I get to know the tracks and I get to know the tires, and I'm a much, much better driver now than I was there at the first race, and I was second. And since then, my best result has been fifth, and I'm, you know, fighting to get one single point at certain races. And you know, that's the tough thing about Formula One, it's not so much in your hand as a driver,
right? And it's an interesting dynamic, because everything you did prior to getting to Formula One, as you said, you had immense success, you won races, you had championships, but even though now you're better than you were, and the results don't reflect that as much.
Yeah exactly. And you know, in prior to Formula One, in the junior categories, all cars are the same. Mm-hmm. You know, you have the teams that work differently in different ways and set up the car differently, but in, you know, basically all the cars are the same, produced from the same manufacturer, and you get the same engine, same gearbox, everything is basically the same. So you just have to manage your car, mm-hmm. you know, the best way possible, and so everyone has a chance. You know, whoever does the best job as a team, working together as a team, will win. You know, it's not to do with, you know, whoever spent more money on R&D or, you know, designing or headcount. It's not about, you know, it's so much about resource and a little bit less about performance,
right?
Which is, that's the frustrating part with Formula One. But yeah. Then there's a lot of good things as well. I'm talking it down now.
Well, you get to travel the world, as we talked about. That's certainly not a bad thing, I would think. And you get to race against some of the best drivers in the world with some of the most high-tech equipment.
Exactly. I mean, the thing in Formula One is you've just got the best car in the world. You know, it's such a phenomenal car to drive. And, you know, nothing can compare to driving a Formula One car. In the high speed corners around the tracks, you know, you can carry so much speed because of the aerodynamics, the downforce that you have. So those kind of forces and the feeling you get from driving the car, you know, it makes up for a lot of things. Then
sure.
That's what I've always dreamt about. Of course, it's frustrating not to be able to win, or even fight for wins. But you know, hopefully one day I can. The thing that I'm focused on now is just to try and do the best job that I can every single time and keep up this, you know, a good level of performance, you know, all the time. And then hope that one day I get a chance in either a top team or that Haas can be fighting for wins.
Well, you certainly have positioned yourself well for that, and that you just recently announced that you've re-signed 2019 with the team, which will mark, well, this was the first year you were with the same team for consecutive seasons in Formula One. Now you're going to be three straight seasons the same team. How much does continuity make a difference for a driver and a team, do you think, in Formula One?
Yeah, it helps not having to worry about contracts, and you know, you don't have to talk to many teams at once. And you know, I don't enjoy dealing with all this stuff, you know, the contract stuff, and I like, you know, racing for this team, and I enjoy working with everyone, and I like, you know, the management here, and I like Gene, and you know, it's just a very fun place to be racing. There's not a lot of politics, and there's not a lot of messing around. It's pretty straightforward here, and you know, we're performing as a team. I've got a pretty good car that can fight for points. You know, at least you can fight for points, and it's a lot more. It's a lot more fun than I've had in other teams in Formula One. So
sure.
I'm happy to continue here.
When you say there's a lot less politics, that strikes me, because usually when I read about Formula One, that's all I'm reading about, especially when you're talking about the top teams. It seems like politics is the dominant storyline about how things shape both how those teams operate and who's successful and the series itself. What's different about Haas F1 or Gene's style that removes that? Is it more of an American type approach versus European? Or
I think it's a lot to do with the fact that Gene is the only guy in control. Of course, Günther is in control. He has the experience, and he you know, he drives the team. But in the end of the day, Gene is the only guy that really decides in the end, and no one can influence him. You know, and he has full control. Whereas in other teams, there's a big board of board members that are, you know, discussing things, and that all are fighting to get, you know, in top of the hierarchy. And you know, there's a lot of selfish interests mm-hmm. when you have so many people trying to decide for a team and or a big corporation like Mercedes and Ferrari, and those teams are big corporations. And sometimes it can get a little bit messy with the politics, and to find out who is in charge can be difficult. And yeah. And here you just got, you know, Gene and Günther running it.
So you mentioned, Kevin, that you'd love to take that next step, and that might come with going to one of those top teams or Haas F1 itself developing into a top tier team. What is there anything that you see that would be attainable for them to take that next step? Is there one thing that you guys think you might need to get to that next level? Or?
Well, it would be good if Formula One could kind of get control over the costs of running a Formula One team, so that perhaps, you know, privateers like us can, you know, fight with the big guys and actually fight with them on a level playing field. And that could be done with a budget cap. You know, they're talking about that for 2021 to introduce some kind of cost cap. Budget cap, which for us would be great, because then, you know, what it comes down to is how you utilize your resources and where you spend the money and how you spend it and you know, I guess more down to the individual people in the teams to try and work as hard as they can and get more out of the performance rather than just throwing more money at it and more getting more people involved. And I think that would be more interesting, but also, you know, that I think that that would be our chance to kind of get fighting with the top guys.
It's interesting because there's also been discussion about that in NASCAR about establishing some way with the, I don't know if this is true in F1 as much, but there's been a dwindling in corporate sponsorship and support in the NASCAR side, but yet costs have remained so high, it's been harder for teams to, I think, kind of find competitiveness with the lack of available dollars out there. But I don't know how you enforce it. I don't know if that's something that has come up in F1. That seems to be the great debate, is how do you pull the reins back on teams and owners? And like you said, they're just used to just kind of spending whatever it takes.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be difficult to control, I guess. But, you know, I mean, the tax people in the government, they control, you know, big corporations for quite well. It must be possible, I think.
You race all over the world, but you live elsewhere too. You live in Dubai, which is interesting. I think I've seen, you know, Formula One drivers who live in, you know, Monaco or Europe or whatever. I don't know if I know of anybody who's chosen to live there. Any reason for being there?
I've just moved away from there. I live in London now, in England.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah, I moved there because we don't get to be home a lot. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's almost only in the beginning of the year, sort of January, December, January, that we get to spend in our home. And for me, you know, I wanted to be in a place that had, you know, a bit better temperatures than Denmark has in January, uh-huh, to be able to train and, you know, prepare myself in the best way for the season. And then Dubai is, you know, quite well placed geographically.
Sure.
When you have to, you know, for the start of the season, when we're going to Australia and China and Bahrain and Baku and, you know, eastern part of the world. So that's why I chose that. But, you know, Dubai is just too different for me compared to where I grew up and,
yeah,
you know, my kind of ideal way of living. So London in England is a bit closer to, you know, Copenhagen in Denmark. So I'm moving there, or I have moved there, and we'll see how that goes.
Okay. So Dubai had its advantages geographically, but maybe not as much culturally.
Yeah. Yeah. It's too different. Yes.
Yeah. Does it help? You're closer to your team and now as well. Is that?
Yes. That's also a big part of that. That last season in 2017, I wasn't driving simulators very much. And now this year we've started to drive simulator much more. So between the races, I'm going to Italy to drive the simulator, and to go from Dubai to Italy and back to Dubai and then go to the races, you know, it's not going to work. So it's easier from England to Italy.
I was fascinated in doing some research here about your backstory, that there was a time between the 2008 and 2009 racing seasons when you actually worked as a factory welder. NASCAR drivers, we've seen drivers who work in shops or do whatever to make things work. What was that year like for you? How long did you do it? And was that a humbling experience to step back from driving and do some welding?
Yeah, I mean, it was it wasn't something I was doing to try and to raise budget. It was just, you know, that I'd run out of
options.
Yeah, really? Opportunities. Huh. And I had to get a job and, you know, prepare myself for life outside of motorsport. And then, you know, I started in this factory in the middle of the season that I thought was going to be my last season of racing. And I was doing well. I was leading that championship. It was Danish championship, Formula Ford. And I was leading it and, you know, doing well. And then by the end of that year, when I'd won the championship, there was I got some support from a wealthy guy in Denmark that was actually the owner of a team in the big series that we were support series of a bigger series in Denmark. So he had a team in that series, and he decided to support me and raise the budget that I needed to continue racing. And then I quit my job in the factory and moved to Germany for a while and started racing properly.
So if you hadn't gotten that break, do you think you'd still be welding? Or
maybe I would be working for Haas anyway.
Okay, well, I'm glad that 10 years past that, a decade later, not only are you still racing, you're guaranteed to be racing again next season and hopefully continue to do well. Thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate
your
time.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
The NASCAR on NBC podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify. Please leave a rating review if you like what you're hearing. And as always, send me feedback on Twitter, at Nate Ryan is my handle. Thanks again for listening to the NASCAR on NBC podcast.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.